Well, there's no other way to put this. It's Monday!
Yay!
Are you reading me?
Yeah, it's interactive.
Yeah, it's Monday, and I hope you had a nice weekend. I don't know about you, but I am sick and tired of the weather.
Yes.
The winds are just ridiculous, which makes it feel, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's last night, I went out, I was taking out the recyclables and stuff, and I went, it's warm out. What's
right.
going on? But the wind, blowing stuff over, blowing stuff into the streets. Be careful while you're out and about.
So, Paul, it's currently, my weather app says it's 38. It was, the day started at 64 degrees at midnight.
64 to 38. And I, does it say feels like because of the wind, if it feels colder?
Let me check that real quick. I'll get back to you. I think 38 is the actual air temperature.
Right.
I don't have a feels like temperature.
Doesn't have a feels like. All right. Well,
but
anyway,
I'm going to guess it feels colder. Yeah, right.
But 38's bad enough.
Right.
And we've had, of course, our St. Patrick's Day celebration broadcast is tomorrow. I hope you will tune in. You are invited to tune in and be a part of it. We've had snow on St. Patrick's Day broadcasts in the past.
We've had snow on opening day, which is like a month
yeah,
after.
Right. What am I saying? Of course we have. All right. Well, it was not a good weekend for U of M fans or Michigan State fans in this whole tournament thing. The Big Ten tournament championship didn't go well for either of us. But the NCAA brackets are set. Michigan State's a 3 seed. That's pretty good, don't
yeah.
you think?
Yeah, especially, I mean, the Big Ten was really, really good this year, too.
Yeah. Of course, we know, unfortunately, they lost to UCLA 88-84 on Friday night in that Big Ten tournament. They're going to face North Dakota State Thursday at 4:05. Of course, WJR will be broadcasting that. Do we get to broadcast the whole tournament or just follow Michigan State? Do you have any idea? I don't know.
So we are, of course, like you said, all of Michigan State. We are broadcasting the tournament. I think, if I remember last year, it was kind of like an NFL red zone thing where they kind of would zip around to all the a bunch of different games. And then obviously as the tournament goes on and there's less and less games, you get the whole Final Four, you get the whole NCAA championship. So yeah, there'll be plenty of college basketball, both Michigan State and otherwise, here on
all
WJR.
Right. Michigan locked up the number one seed despite losing to Purdue 80-72.
Yeah, that was quite a beatdown that we were not expecting.
Yeah, I was not expecting. They had their hands full in this whole tournament. They played. Unlike any of the games during the regular season where they won big oftentimes, they just got away with it a few times that they did win, and they didn't get away with it with Purdue losing 80-72 in the Big Ten Tournament Championship. Now, Michigan will take on the winner of Howard versus UMBC Thursday night at 7:10 p.m.
Yeah, that's one of those games where it's where it's like last four in, where they added like a second, like a pre-round to determine to round out the
original. Are you saying that Howard and UMBC are not big deal teams, which always worries me because then the team doesn't get up for the game?
Right, and there's always one team that makes a run that you're not expecting.
Right.
Obviously, the Cinderella element.
So that the brackets are all destroyed within 10, 15 minutes.
Right.
Whoever controls the brackets gets to keep the money. I don't know how that works. Doesn't matter. Anyway, we do have the team here. You can hear Mike Parsons, our executive producer. Danielle Mason is out and about, but in and out. There she is. And she is, of course, the queen of switches. Rich Luzinski keeping track of the WJR traffic and weather first for you. You know, you can get it on your phone, but it's also better to get it from Rich. He can add a lot of information. While you're streaming us or podcasting us. If you have to come back, you can do all that at WJR.com. I do hope you have the free WJR app. And, of course, you can see us if you want, if you're in a position to do that. Facebook and YouTube pages have live streaming right now. So we're glad that we're here. What is this? Is this the third week of entering the war?
Yes, I believe so. We are in the third.
We're not concluding the third week. We're starting the third week. I'm not sure if I heard that right.
Right.
All right. We have our own war situation here, and we have to be aware of that, as we certainly learned with Temple Israel in West Bloomfield. And I found it fascinating that most of the people interviewed there, the significant people, which is all of the people, that they were, I'm not sure the word they used, disappointed or shocked, or they were disappointed but not surprised, I guess.
Right.
Meaning they kind of, this is what they practiced for because this is the way of the world right now. And the fact that they spend more money on protecting themselves, then that's like their first line item of money needed to be Jewish, which is so unbelievable and unacceptable.
Yeah, it's a terrible burden to have to carry.
It is. And the front page of the Detroit News above the fold today, the award-winning Detroit News serving Michigan since 1873, the Temple attacker's brother found to be a Hezbollah commander. And you got to ask yourself, in Dearborn Heights, in that whole entire area, how many Hezbollah sympathizers are there and that we have to be concerned about? If they're listening, which they are not, I would remind them they are Americans and have been given great opportunity by being in America and being Americans. If you're not here illegally, if you are, get the hell out, or you will be found by ICE. As much as the Democrats and the media wants to put ICE down, ICE has a job that they are following as given to them by Congress. They followed it in an unfortunate way, given their leadership. But there's a change of leadership. And they should not be bullies to anyone anymore, but they should continue to do their job. All right, another story that's been around, and I don't agree with Nancy Kaffer very often from the Detroit Free Press USA Today Network editorial page editor. From a political standpoint, we're from different ideologies and worlds, but I did enjoy her. When was this? This must have been Sunday. Sunday. Raw milk fight is a sign of the times. Well, if raw milk is a sign of the times, I'm not putting her down. I liked her column on this because I've been wondering what is all the talk about raw milk? It's foolishness is what all the talk about raw milk is. It's ridiculous. It's, you may as well say, well, yeah, I think raw milk is really good, and the earth is flat. Of course, you know that, right? Of course the earth is flat. You know that. You're not one of those stupid people that thinks the earth looks like the globe that we see when they fake those rocket moonshots that don't really exist because those are on a stage somewhere. If you want to be in that group, go for the raw milk and pass up the technology that has saved millions of lives. That technology in this case, I'm not saying millions of lives have saved from keeping people from drinking raw milk. I don't think there are millions of people who want to drink raw milk. But be that as it may, let me introduce you to an idea here, folks. It's called pasteurization. And you know why they came up with pasteurization? Was to take the cow poop and everything else that's in that raw milk out of the raw milk and make it healthier. Duh! What could be so hard to understand and to move on and worry about other things than getting raw milk approved? What's the point? Next up, they'll be fighting for spoiled sushi.
putting grass on your sandwich.
That's what grass-fed means, isn't it? I don't know. Did I get out of the wrong side of bed? I don't know. I might have. If I see one more story in the news saying gas prices might be $3.80 a gallon, my goodness, it's still under what it was when Joe Biden was president in 2022. I don't remember them carrying on the same way. You know, the Trump derangement syndrome, I understand it. but not when it gets in your way of doing your job, Alyssa Slotkin. Oh, did I say that out loud? I used to think she was pretty straight shooter, pretty bright. I didn't always agree with her, but I respected her. But the Trump derangement syndrome has caused her to go off on all these other crazy areas that I just don't understand why she is. But whatever. Anything else? Is there anything else on your mind, Michael?
Yes, but you know what? We've got a lot of show, so let's save some of it.
Oh, all right. Just because the music's playing, I guess we have to go.
You're on a roll, so this could go on all day. So
yeah,
we got to.
Well, I don't think so. All right. As you're on your way to making each and every day count, because each day is a gift, we're happy to be with you. We don't know about the QTR that Kim has reminded us about, quality time remaining. So make the most of it. If you're not living the life you've always wanted, then live the life you've always wanted, because it's never too late to correct that and make it better. And I do thank you for choosing to be an important part of the best and brightest audience in all of radio. And that's what you are when you listen to this great station, WJR. It is 1216 with Paul W. Smith. Well, you know what? Maybe we should have, Mr. Parsons, put Dave Rieger on to talk about the Academy Awards. I thought the show was good, okay. There's a couple of columns out that I didn't even read that are talking about they had a lot of issues. They had a lot of things go wrong. I saw a couple of things, but I watch it because it's a live broadcast. So
we can grab them at 1 or 1:45 if you want.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's do that, because he just stopped by the studio and said, and this is, of course, this is from Dave Rieger's perspective. You know, he likes to put money down. He gambles on stuff. He said that all of the DraftKings, one of those online gambling things, all of the DraftKings picks won.
Yes.
At the Academy Awards.
He'll join us at 1 o'clock, but yeah, that's what he told me.
That's crazy. I mean, does that mean, well, I'll ask him. I'll save the questions 1 o'clock after the 1 o'clock WJR news. We'll have an update. Final word, I guess, on the Academy Awards. And I'm going to go look for those two articles I scanned over this morning talking about, they said, things that went wrong. But, you know, people are always looking for negative. They're always looking for something bad. It's just the way things are these days, which is why we do our best. Try to do relentless positive radio the best we can. All right. And we turn to experts who can help us do that sometimes, even though not all the topics are obviously positive, as we check in with our friend Andy Arena, director of the Detroit Crime Commission, former special agent in charge of the FBI Detroit office. And the investigation continues with the Temple Israel attack. No better way to put that. That's what it was, a Temple Israel attack. We do know that the FBI has taken over the investigation, and we've since found that the Temple attacker's brother said to be a Hezbollah commander. Andy, it's always a pleasure. I'm sorry, it's about bad news that we have to talk with you about, but it's a pleasure having you on. Do you like the woman who's now in charge of the Detroit office?
I've not met her. I've heard good things about her, but I have not had the opportunity to meet with her. So I hope to have lunch with her at some point. I guess I'm getting old, Paul, because they look so young, you know.
Well, tell her we would love to have her on at her convenience, and tell her. Oh, see, all I have to do is hope for these things, and she's on tomorrow with us, according to Mike. So. Oh, well, yes, I know she's on at the St. Patrick's Day party, but I won't really get a chance to have any deep, meaningful conversation with her. You know, we are going from 11 to 2, but we have about 300 guests. So at least I'll meet her and we will talk with her. We want to get her on sometime for a long, meaningful conversation. And you can tell her, I hope you would, that she'll be among friends. Anyway, Is there anything?
Well, I'm one of the 300 tomorrow, Paul, so I'll give me an opportunity. I'll introduce myself. Sure.
Well, this is good that we're bringing you together. That's perfect. Yeah. That's what this party is all about, bringing people together to celebrate in spite of some of the tough times. We are a great country and a great people. Sometimes we need to remind ourselves, and oftentimes we need to take a break like this and celebrate, which is what we're planning on doing tomorrow. Doyle's Irish Pub out there at St. John's. All right, Andy, what's the very latest that you can tell us about this Dearborn Heights man who attacked Temple Israel?
Well, yeah, we're starting to see more information come out on this individual. And I think over the next few days, Paul, it's going to be a lot more coming out, right? So the Israelis are saying that that his brother was a Hezbollah commander. You know, everything the Israelis say you have to take with a grain of salt, but I can see it. I mean, I'm not shocked by that. You know, there are many people in the Lebanese Shia community, and they look at Hezbollah as, you know, this charitable organization, this, political party. And, you know, I'm Catholic. So back in the day, they used to say that about the Irish Republican Army, right? At the end of the day, they're a designated terrorist organization. Prior to September 11th, 2001, they killed more Americans than any other terrorist organization. So they are terrorists. So, you know, I think that, if there's this link, I would not be shocked by it, Paul.
Well, you know, you bring up an excellent point, Andy Arena, as you always do, and that is we look at Hezbollah as this terrorist organization, which they are. The people in Lebanon look at Hezbollah as the people that get them food when they're starving. They look at Hezbollah as the people who can get dentists for people who need dentists. Hezbollah, quote-unquote, takes care of many people in Lebanon. And so they look at them almost like we look at our Red Cross, for God's sakes. It's a good point you bring up.
Yeah, to some point, I mean, Lebanon is a very diverse country. You know, you've got a third of the country is Christian, a third is Shia Muslim, and a third is Sunni. And so, you know, to at least a third of that country, yeah, they are seen as saviors. The other two-thirds, maybe not so much.
Yeah, well, we know not so much, and we also know there are plenty of people in Lebanon who want Hezbollah to get the hell out, or at the very least, stop lobbing bombs at Israel, which causes Israel to bring hellfire to them. I mean, that's just the reality. If you bomb Israel from Lebanon, Israel's going to bomb Lebanon, and the Lebanese people are not stupid. They're living it. So, well, we'll see. Hey, I'll look forward to seeing you tomorrow.
I appreciate it, Paul. See you tomorrow.
I'll be the guy in a green fog. Thanks, Andy.
Thank you.
Andy Arena, director of the Detroit Crime Commission, former special agent in charge of the FBI Detroit office. And together, we will meet the woman in charge of the Detroit FBI office at our St. Patrick's Day party. You'll be tuned in from 11 to 2. As we continue, In Focus on WJR. President is talking about the Kennedy Center, but of course everyone asks him about the war and all of that. So if anything comes up, Mike assures me we'll put it up on the air. But at this moment, we continue with, as scheduled, our programming. And we welcome an attorney from Minnesota. He's a partner at Moorman, Cardell and Erickson, PA. His name is Eric Cardell, Esquire. He's the lead attorney representing people accused of being false electors in the 2020 election, who are now, after being basically attacked by our attorney general, now they're suing Attorney General Dana Nessel. To bring us up to date, here is Eric Cardell. Eric, my name's Paul W. Smith. Welcome to Michigan.
Well, it's great to be on. Thank you so much.
So I don't know who sent out this press release, probably not you, but it starts off with Michigan's failed Attorney General Dana Nessel. And then it goes on with a quote from Michonne Maddock, one of the victorious 2020 Michigan electors that you've represented. Quote, Dana Nessel, who is perhaps the worst lawyer in the USA, I don't know, I always went by the how to win friends and influence people, and I don't think, you know, that starting out that way makes the most sense, but you're right there on the front line. Tell me about it.
Yeah, I mean, my investigation basically led to filing the notice of intent to sue. There's no lawsuit yet. But your audience should be concerned about investigating what I've been seeing, and that is the role of 501c3s, particularly the state's United Democracy Center, had a contract with the Michigan Attorney General. And we see this in other states, Wisconsin and Arizona, where there were prosecution of the 2020 electors. And they seem to have these contracts to provide legal advice to push the prosecutors in the pre-charging phase to select their political opponents for prosecution.
The whole idea here is you haven't done it yet, but to sue Dana Nessel, the false electors defendants, if you will, to sue Dana Nessel alleging malicious prosecution. The whole idea, I think that was from Bridge, Michigan, the whole idea being that everything she was doing, and we have seen this, was politically based, basically.
Right. So the Attorney General had a contract with a progressive group called the States United Democracy Center. And this is a contract with a law firm to provide legal advice. And pre-charging, it appears that the States United Democracy Center was promoting or pushing the Attorney General to charge the electors with crimes. And so that's all kind of secret under attorney-client privilege. But the Judicial Watch investigation in Michigan, Wisconsin, and Arizona have now produced documents that States United Democracy Center was at the center of promoting this. So imagine if you had a political opponent that organized a 501c3 and got into the Attorney General's office and was pushing for you to be prosecuted. You'd think that's unfair, too. It's just a really bad policy to have 501c3s in there pre-charging. We should have independent prosecutors and employees reviewing materials rather than having, you know, political opponents trying to grind a political axe through prosecution.
Well, you have said, if I can read one of your quotes, government, and I can't argue with this, government officials who weaponize their offices against citizens for political purposes must be held accountable under the law. I don't know who could be against that statement.
Well, right. And so here, the particular the policy, and I need more documents. They're coming in slowly, but I do have the document from Arizona showing that the progressive nonprofit was behind the charges brought in Arizona. The same nonprofit had a contract with Michigan Attorney General, and the result was the same type of charges. So we need to investigate more, but you know, we don't want nonprofits influencing charging decisions of nonprofits because they can go after their political opponents.
Right, which appears to be the case, or just on the outside looking in and hearing what you're saying to me. We haven't heard from the Dana Nessel people at this point. Do you think, and I'm sure you're a great attorney and your law firm is a great one, Eric, but do you think they had to come to Minnesota because Michigan attorneys would be afraid to go up against Dana Nessel?
I think there's an issue there just with respect to retaliation and so forth, but I have specialized in election integrity work in Michigan and Wisconsin and Pennsylvania. We had some victories a couple years ago in Ypsilanti and East Lansing regarding some ordinances that violated the Constitution regarding elections. So we're very excited about litigating in Michigan. We've been doing it for a long time.
All right. Good to meet you. I'm sure we'll talk again. Eric Cardell, the Esquire partner at Mormon, Cardell, and Erickson, PA. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You do the same as we continue in Focus at WJR at 12:43. Well, as we mentioned, as we were closing out the show Friday, Saturday, in honor of Pi Day 314, which is a day noted by math enthusiasts around the world, of which I am not one. I told myself early on I wasn't good at math, and therefore I wasn't good at math, which is unfortunate. Please don't tell yourself things like that. But the Grand Traverse Pie Company celebrated by serving a free slice of Michigan ABC crumb pie, delivering one to me apples, blueberries, and cherries, and the crumbly top is one of my favorite pies of all time. It's a perfect complement to the craveable comfort foods offered by Grand Traverse Pie, which now includes chicken pot pie, quiche, and some really good heartwarming soups. And now we're past Pie Day, but we're smack dab in the middle of Michigan Food and Agriculture Month, and they celebrate that whole month with the Michigan fruit pie, whether it be the ABC, apple, blueberry, cherry, or any number of other great pies. And I am reminded that we started with Grand Traverse Pie Company with Mike Busley and his lovely wife, Denise, a long while ago. Mike, it's unbelievable because I remember our first broadcast conversation when we were just starting out and how fabulous your business has grown because it's such a good company.
Well, good morning, Paul W. Thank you so much for those kind words and that nice introduction. We're on our 30th year, so yeah, time flies. And Mike Feezy was down there, and I remember, you know, just thinking back of the days back when we first got to got to work together and know each other. Fond memories, and it's been a great journey. We learn a lot along the way, met a lot of wonderful people, and have a great team. So very blessed in our journey.
Well, I must say, of course, Mike is gone. A lot of people in the last 30 years we've lost. 30 years ago, you were an engineer in management at Lockheed Martin in San Diego. And you could kind of see some of the writing on the wall. Lockheed Martin started cutting its workforce. And so you and Denise was in medical sales, said, you know, we got to do something else. How in the world did you go from being an engineer at Lockheed Martin? How did that turn out to be the Grand Traverse Pie Company?
Well, Paul W., when I hired on, it was General Dynamics in the 80s in San Diego, 20,000-plus employees with company campgrounds, parks. You know, it was a true the essence of that company. The culture was very strong. Over the course of time in the mid-90s when I resigned, there were only 230 employees left. So imagine going from 20,000 to 230.
Wow.
The culture, the company wasn't obviously anything like it was, and we had to let a lot of people go, and I knew at some point my number was going to come up, and there was no passion, no satisfaction going to work every day like there was when I started. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to own a company. It's like, let's just move home. Let's just move back to Michigan, our roots, take our kids, Kelly and Bobby. Let's start over. And we were customers of the Julian Pie Company in the mountains east of San Diego. And we just go up there and relax and have a slice of apple pie and under their big oak tree out front and think, this is what we're searching for in our lives. Can we create something like this? And coming through the all the turmoil and changes of medical sales and defense contracting, let's flip the page here and do something on our own with a feel-good product where we're connecting with community and our team every day. So put on aprons and make pie. And that's a whole lot different than putting on a suit and sitting through meetings. And, you know, so we started in July of 96, and with the help of Liz Smothers, who was the owner, founder of Julian Pie, she helped train us, and here we are today. So with the help of many, many people, and it's been an incredible journey.
And for me, 96 will always be that date I remember when I came back full time to start the morning show, because mm-hmm. I'd been involved with the radio station for several years before that, doing weekends, doing Focus, doing fill-in for JP, all of that. But 96 is when I came back to start my own morning show and did it for nearly 30 years, and you've been doing it for 30 years, and it's been so successful. How many stores now?
We have 11, and we have our we're in about 800 markets across the Midwest.
I'm sorry. I was just told we're late, and we are late. A whole minute late. We got to run. Congratulations and happy anniversary, Mike Bussey.
All righty.
Grand Traverse Pie Company, WJR. Welcome into Hour 2, Relentless Positive Radio. Nice to be here with the team. Mike Parsons, our executive producer. Danielle Mason running the controls. Rich Luzinski, who keeps track of WJR traffic and weather first. As you're on your way to making each and every day count, each day is a gift. And thanks for choosing to be an important part of the best and brightest audience in all of radio. Got a lot going on. You can stream us from anywhere in the world. You can come back and podcast us if you miss us when we're on from noon to 2. Tomorrow, we're on from 11 to 2 for St. Patrick's Day. Be sure to be tuned in. You can get the free WJR app and use it as you will. And right now, Facebook and YouTube pages are live streaming us as we have the perfect sandwich with the daily dose of Dietz, All Talk with Kevin Dietz first, and then us. And then JR Afternoon with Ryan Armani. If you start off with JR Mornings and then stick around for Mitch Albom after Ryan and then the Sports Wrap, you're going to have a wonderful day. I promise it. Let's see. I just had something here I wanted to mention. Well, I can't remember what it was. Here it is. Ford to buy back nearly 32 million shares of its stock.
Wow.
And then it goes on to say, here's what it means. I don't know what it means. So maybe we get somebody on to tell us that tomorrow.
Or Wednesday.
Oh, yeah, we won't do it tomorrow. Tomorrow is a crazy day. Yeah. And I'm trying to find, somebody had said about something that had gone wrong. One of the magazines, I don't know which one it was on my morning look-see at everything. Oh, yeah, here it is, Rolling Stone. Well, not that I depend on them for all insight, but let's just see what they talked about. We're bringing in Dave Rieger because he's our guy. Rieger reviews it. And he told us earlier, the start of the show, we hadn't planned on having him on, but he said all DraftKings picks won. What exactly, Dave, does that mean?
So you remember on Friday...
Yes, I vaguely remember there was a Friday.
We went through in the second half of Rieger Reviews It, we went through the odds for Best Picture, Best Actor, and every favorite that DraftKings picked on Friday won, so there was no surprises last night at the Oscars.
It says here, Rolling Stone, Oscars 2026, the best, the worst, and most, what the heck, I'll say, moments. It says it was a shaky show that was packed with minor production stumbles and few surprises. At least Conan was there to make us laugh. Yeah, I thought Conan did a nice job. I may have fallen asleep a couple times. I had to stay up extra late last night for Kim coming in from the airport, and she had it's a blank show out there, folks, at the airport. You can thank your Democrats for not getting paychecks to the TSA, the hardworking TSA members. It's not good. You can find yourself thinking you're getting on a plane, and when you get up to the door, because you're there in plenty of time, they say you can't get on because your luggage didn't come yet. And then they say, yeah, only two ATF people showed up for behind the scenes where they check the baggage, x-ray it, and do all of that stuff. So Democrats, approve the paychecks for ATF. You're not going to affect ICE. It's already funded. So stop pretending that's what you're doing, taking some high moral ground on ICE because you don't like it, and a lot of people don't like their tactics. Most people like what they're there to do, though, which is what Congress asked them to do. I digress. The Oscars, I love watching any live show. Did you see, at one time, you know, it's always bad when someone's trying to thank everybody. They worked all their lives to get there. And they retract the microphone.
Yeah.
The microphone disappears into the floor.
They told everybody before the show that the producers told them, do not thank everybody because nobody knows who you're talking about.
Right.
So they told them not to, to do it.
I think that was when they had a tie for best short film or whatever. And I forgot who said it. They said it's ironic that the awards for the short films are going to be the longest speeches.
Taking longer than it. That was Conan said that. Yeah,
they retracted the microphone, and you could tell it was an awkward moment because nobody knew how to react.
And then the camera went to Conan, and he kind of went, oh, boy, don't put the camera on me. I didn't keep those people from talking. And then they went back to the people.
Yeah. But
it was crazy.
I missed Conan's opening monologue, which is what I was watching.
Because, I did, too.
Because it started at 7. I thought it started at 8.
Yeah. Well, the only reason, I guess, they started at 7 was to try to get out before 11, and they got out about 20 minutes before 11.
It was only supposed to go to 10:30, so.
Yeah.
That's what it was scheduled?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So was Sinners the big winner or not?
Sinners was the big winner as far as best actor. The one battle after another won best movie.
And that was kind of expected, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. And the best director, yeah. All the favorites won. Everything went as planned. That's why you had to bet more money to win money if you bet the favorites, they were all minus. So.
So then the one surprise, I mean, maybe there were several, but to me it was a surprise to see Barbara Streisand come out onto the stage.
Yeah.
But she looked infirm at best. Somebody had to kind of lead her out there, if you noticed. She had to take the arm of
someone.
There
were rumors that she was going to come out and sing the song, and she sang a couple lines, and that was it.
Well, it says here, this was one of the worst moments. Babs and Robert Redford deserved better. In theory, there's no better person to honor the late Robert Redford than his The Way We Were co-star, Barbara Streisand. And there's no better song for her to sing than the movie's title track, which won Best Original Song in 1973. I think that was written by our old friend, Marvin Hamlisch, in fact. But in execution, the Robert Redford tribute was a semi-disaster with poor audio.
Well, I guess the question is, who else would have come out and done the tribute to Robert Redford if they thought that it was the right thing to do in the right song?
But what they're talking about is that there was poor audio.
There
was.
Oh,
I mean,
okay.
She was trying to talk, and the orchestra's real loud. And
yeah.
I see that. You know what, folks? We see that in television. Heck, it happens in radio, but we see it in television now because television networks, like all broadcasting, have fewer employees than they ever did. They had a lot of employees that were stepping around, sitting around going, you know, why do we have all these employees? Well, that's one reason. Somebody was paying attention to the audio levels and would have said, bring down the orchestra. But nobody did that. And I see it. I see it on the CBS Evening News. I think that new guy, Tony DeCoppel or whatever, is very good, but he is surrounded by ineptness. And it's sad. It's unfortunate. Nobody asked me, but I thought I would say it. What else? In terms of the winners and losers, there were no big surprises, I guess.
Nope. Everything kind of went as was predicted.
Yeah. So you didn't make any money on this, is what you're saying?
I didn't make any bets. It wasn't a smart value.
Is this like the first thing lately that you haven't bet on?
No comment on that. I mean, we do have March Madness starting on Thursday. So
oh my goodness!
It is a big time.
Dave was saving his money for that.
I mean, it's probably next to the Super Bowl, probably the biggest gambling. This tournament.
How is DraftKings picking Michigan State and Michigan? How are they feeling we're going to fare?
I haven't gone through that yet, but I will report back to you.
Would you report back on that?
But Seth Greenberg is picking, of ESPN, is picking both Michigan State and Michigan to make the Final Four. So,
wouldn't that be fabulous? We could use that right now, couldn't we?
It'd be awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know who else to ask but you, David.
I'm around. Mike can find me.
Okay. Thank you very much. God bless you.
See ya.
Dave Rieger. Rieger reviews it on Fridays, but he comes in when we need him also for anything because he's an all-around, what do we call those? Jack-of-all-trades?
A renaissance man.
A renaissance man. Well, see what I say? Fox is screwing up just now. They just had a close-up of some woman walking right toward the camera, and you could see her pores, and then it went off to bars, you know, the colorful bars.
Oh, right, the Please Stand By.
Yes. So like I said, it's everywhere. There's just not enough people being used in all these positions. And unfortunately, The people in charge at the corporate level in New York, for example, are not going to say, geez, we cut it too close to the bone. We need more people. They're saying things like, oh, boy, I can't wait till AI handles that. I'm sorry to say. All right, we continue in Focus on WJR. Stay with us. Well, that'll be fun. Stick around for that. JR Afternoon, Ryan Ermani. Meanwhile, we're taking care of business here. We know about these six kids that died serving their country when their refueling aircraft crashed in Iraq this past week, Thursday. No details that we've seen yet about what happened, but we don't ever want to forget the victims. Major John A. Klinner, 33, of Auburn, Alabama. Captain Ariana G. Savino, 31, of Covington, Washington. Tech Sergeant Ashley B. Pruitt, 34, of Bardstown, Kentucky. Captain Seth R. Koval, 38, of Mooresville, Indiana. Captain Curtis J. Angst, 30, of Wilmington, Ohio. And Tech Sergeant Tyler H. Simmons, 28, of Columbus, Ohio. These are the crew members who died aboard a U.S. Air Force KC-135 Strato tanker. Peter Meyer, the former congressman and Army veteran, is here to talk a little bit about that, those heroes, and the latest in Iran. Peter, always a pleasure.
Thank you for having me on.
Can you tell us anything more? Have you heard anything more about what happened to these kids?
I would say the smartest speculation, kind of looking at some damage to one of the aircraft involved, was that it was likely a mid-air collision. One of the challenges with especially military operations is a lot of the proximity sensors and some of the kind of location broadcasting that you see in kind of normal course of events, especially with civilian air traffic, that helps prevent these type of collisions. You know, sometimes that can be more harm than good in a scenario where you may have to worry about enemy aircraft or surface-to-air missiles, you know, or other threats. And so that's where, you know, in the military typically turns some of those systems off when they're in a combat zone, when they're flying operational missions in potentially contested airspace. And
well,
so the speculation is that the two may have collided. Yeah.
You mentioned this, and it just a bell went off, and we heard that as a potential problem with the helicopter hitting the airplane at Washington, D.C., at the Washington airport, that the helicopter may indeed have had some of that equipment turned off. And nobody's said why. And I'm glad you brought this up, Peter Meyer. I saw this and didn't hear anyone really talking about it. Doesn't mean they didn't. I just might have missed it. But I saw the other KC-135 Strato tanker that was up in the air with them, and their back tail, I don't know, what do you call that? Part of the back tail of the airplane, which is very important for maneuverability and such, was sheared off.
Yeah.
I'm glad you mentioned it.
That's a pretty, you know, significant indicator that there was likely a mid-air collision. I would say the one difference, some of the helicopter involved, I believe, in the tragic crash last year along the Potomac, you know, with an Army helicopter that collided with a civilian aircraft that was landing at Ronald Reagan Airport. That aircraft was more of a training aircraft. It didn't necessarily have the latest in kind of anti-collision avionics, and it was flying in an area where the margin of safety is, you know, 100 feet, 200 feet, you know, between this helicopter lane and the approach lane. And so, you know, obviously some similarities, but when we're talking about two very large tankers, especially if they're potentially flying at each other, you know, you're not talking about a lot of vertical separation. And if you think about a two aircraft that may be traveling 400, 500 miles an hour, you know, when they're heading towards each other, they close miles very, very quickly.
You know, and also you remind us also, Peter Meyer, about that training helicopter thing. They also were wearing night vision goggles, which takes away a lot of their vision, which doesn't make any sense that anything like that would be taking place near the airspace of Ronald Reagan. And I believe, I hope and pray, that they have stopped doing those kinds of missions, training and otherwise, in that area. But back to this one, You know, people would be surprised, and I only say this because in my work, I have been up in airplanes with other airplanes, and you would think when you're in the sky, you can very easily see each other. I'm here to tell you, you cannot. And so you point out brilliantly, Peter, these guys going 500 miles an hour or whatever, when they see each other, they don't have a lot of time to react.
Not at all. And there was a tragic case over Brazil. This has gone back now 10 or 15 years, but it was two aircraft. One was a civilian kind of American private jet. The other a Brazilian airliner. They were heading towards each other on the same trajectory. One thought they were given a different altitude. The private jet didn't even know that they hit an aircraft. They just thought heard a bump because they were going at each other roughly 1,000 miles an hour combined. And at that moment, you know, if you're not exactly looking straight and looking at that little dot coming towards you, it's incredibly easy to miss that. And
it's astonishing that you brought that up, mm-hmm. because I was supposed to be on the civilian airplane because a friend of mine was taking delivery of that airplane from the manufacturer. They were flying, and it happened exactly as you said, Peter. They felt a little bump, and they went, what the hell was that? And they looked out at the end of their wing, and the flaps that go up, the winglet, was sheared off. And they thought, oh, my gosh, something must have dropped from a commercial airline way above us, hit the wing. They didn't know what happened until they landed early at a military airport, and they were told, yeah, did you hear about that plane crash? And that's when they put it all together and found out, oh, my God, we had a midair collision. And the little private jet survived, and the big airliner filled with passengers did not.
Yeah.
And then the pilots of this private jet, it's not a little private jet, but this private jet, the passengers were held by the government trying to blame them for the accident. I remember this so well because I was almost in the middle of it. So it's amazing you brought that up as an example, Peter. God bless you for all you do. I can you take a guess on when the heck we declare this war over with Iran?
You know, I hope we see the type of political changes in Iran that will allow the military phase to conclude, you know, as quickly as possible. But the U.S. has degraded 80% of Iran's offensive military capacity. They're not able to do what they were able to do just 2 weeks ago or even 1 week ago. And so now it's really, you know, a moment of looking at leverage and trying to see that political transformation, you know, begin in earnest.
You know, we keep hearing about how they have been degraded, but my God, they still surprise us each day with a big hit.
Well, it's they only have to be right once. That's the challenge.
You're right. That's the point. You're right. Peter Meyer, former congressman and Army veteran and guest expert on this program often and on WJR. Thank you, Peter.
Thank you, sir. Always a pleasure, Paul.
My pleasure. We continue in focus on WJR at about 1:31. You know, that was a long time ago. Maybe we get my friend David Rimmer on, who was on that plane that crashed in with that airliner. And I think either the airliner or both of the planes didn't have the transponders on for whatever reason. We don't know. One was a brand new plane being picked up and delivered. That's the plane that my friend David was on, invited me to go along for the ride, but I had an international auto show I had to go to, so I couldn't do it. So he invited another friend from the New York Times to go on the plane with him, and it became a very big story, of course, and the New York Times has done some great stories. But maybe it's still a very tough topic for David to talk about, so I don't know if that we'd ever be able to get him on to talk about it. Anyway, I'd forgotten about it myself until it was just brought up here by Mr. Meyer. All right. Federal Communications Commission Chairman Brendan Carr is said to be drawing sharp criticism after warning U.S. broadcasters that their licenses could be at risk over coverage of the ongoing war with Iran. Well, there's a story I haven't paid attention to at all, but luckily WJR's Marie Osborne, Director of Community Affairs and News, in fact, is all over the story and is here to talk about it. Good afternoon, Marie.
Hi, Paul. So this all came to light in a weekend social media post. That's where Brendan Carr accused some networks of promoting misinformation and cautioned them to change course ahead of their next license renewals. And his comments came as he amplified an online message from President Trump, who took issue with reporting on damage to U.S. military aircraft in Saudi Arabia. The president suggesting news outlets were framing events in a way that undermines the country's warfare efforts. So Carr's warning immediately triggered some pushback from free speech advocates and Democrat lawmakers, critics arguing that the government pressure on broadcasts over editorial choices runs counter to First Amendment protections, and it echoes previous concerns about Carr's approach to media oversight. The FCC chairman has repeatedly floated the idea of targeting station licenses over programming decisions, moves long-time regulatory experts say could face some big legal hurdles. The latest, this latest little dust-up arrives as the administration faces some weak public supports for the conflict, and tensions rise over disruptions to that critical oil shipping route in the Straits of Hormuz, which continue to send global prices for gas and oil higher.
So where do we go with this? Would this be easy to follow up on? Although you couldn't get anyone in the media to investigate it because they're damning the media. And that goes for Brendan Carr. That goes for the president of the United States. It goes with the war secretary, Pete Hegseth. They're all criticizing the media. So I'm not sure you get the media to investigate. But Mr. Carr accused broadcasters of, quote, running hoaxes and news distortions. And I'm just wondering, wouldn't that be a relatively easy thing to run down and see if that's true or not?
To see whether or not they were reporting fake news?
Yes, basically, if they were running hoaxes and news distortions. And I don't think they should. I agree they shouldn't do that. Not a news organization. They're the last bastion of those that we're supposed to rely on and can't anyway. But couldn't you just find that and prove it or disprove it?
Right. But they're kind of he was just kind of making this blanket statement. The president also suggesting that he didn't like the way some media were framing things that were happening in the war effort. And it's hard to, it's up to them to track that down or to point to a specific example of this right here is fake. This article here is fake, or this broadcast has been fake. So they're not doing that. They're just kind of making this blanket statement.
Well, one thing the president talked about, the Wall Street Journal reporting 5 American refueling planes had been struck in Saudi Arabia. He claimed the headline was intentionally misleading. Well, tell us how it's misleading. Were the planes struck or were they not? I don't get that. He also says, but this is the way he is, he also accused the news media of wanting the United States to lose the war.
Yeah.
This is just the way this president sadly communicates in many ways.
And remember, there was a kerfuffle a few weeks ago when Pete Hegseth pushed back in a press conference about and stated that he thought the news media was purposely focusing on the deaths that had happened early on in this war effort as a way to discredit the president or make the president look bad. And, a lot of reporters were asking, well, are you suggesting then that we don't report on the fact that American lives were lost in this effort? So that kind of tamped that down. But,
sure.
This is a message that's going out, more than once.
Marie, do you know if the report that I just grazed on, didn't dig deep into, that Pete Hegseth was unhappy with photographs of himself and therefore banned certain photographers? Was that a true story? Is there any way to verify that?
I'll have to check that out. I don't know that as that actually
You saw what
happened.
I'm talking about, though, right?
Actually, I didn't. So when you were talking about it, it piqued my interest as well. But I don't remember that story.
We'll see if it's true, because I think it says an awful lot about somebody who is in the middle of a war with the potential of more people dying, that he could actually have time to worry about what the pictures of him look like when he's holding a press conference.
Yeah.
I know where he got that. He got that from his boss. But really? I mean, I'd love to know the rest of the story. And Paul Harvey's not with us anymore, so it's going to be the rest of the story with Marie Osborne.
I'll see what I can find for you. We need more politicians like Carl Levin. Remember, he didn't care what he looked like in front of the camera. He just said what he had to say, and he moved on, right?
God bless him. Yep. Yep. And though we didn't always agree by any stretch, but we always got along, I respected what he was trying to do, and I do believe he loved our country, even though the people who are against him say anybody who's liberal doesn't love our country. That's just not the way we're going to get anywhere, folks. So anyway, Marie, thank you very much. Always
thank
a good
you.
Job. Marie Osborne here on WJR. You want to talk about people who do a good job. I'm going to tell you, that's my friends at Family Heating, Cooling, and Electric. These folks have done a good job. I've known them almost as long as they've been in existence. I haven't known them for all 50 years, but I've known them for a very long time. I've known the family, and I'm happy to say they have resisted the urge that a lot of other heating, air conditioning, cooling, whatever companies couldn't resist. And that is, they have not sold out to another big company. You'd be amazed at how many of these kinds of companies have sold out to another company. And they just keep the same family name there and make you believe that this is what's going on. I'm here to tell you that Dan Pelko, Crystal Klemperd Pelko, are still in charge and running Family Heating, just like the family has for 50 years. So that, first of all, I think is important to know, that you're getting what you always thought you were getting. You're getting the Klemperd family, basically, there, the next generation. And so when people come to your home, it's Family Heating. It's their employees at Family Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. It's not a bunch of hired contractors, which is what you're getting at a lot of other places. And so as the sound, smells, and warmth of spring have finally arrived here in Michigan, today maybe being accepted, we do have the threat, and we do get this feeling. A lot of people around me getting their power outages all the time now. My power went off the other day, and my generator kicked on right away, and what a godsend. We've got these nasty spring storms already, and too many of us have been caught off guard with power outages that these storms can leave behind. But my friends at Family Heating, Cooling, and Electrical are definitely here to help. There is no company I trust more, because I know the family, I know the company, I know none of their people work on commission. This year, you can be ready for Mother Nature with a reliable standby generator. Family Heating, Cooling, and Electrical offers generator installations, generator maintenance, generator repairs. By the way, did you know that if your generator is not serviced by a certified technician, it will void the manufacturer's warranty? And if you don't receive maintenance after 200 hours of runtime, that can also void your warranty. The technicians at Family Heating, Cooling, and Electrical are Generac certified to keep your generator working. Give your family the peace of mind that comes with knowing if the power goes out, your lights will stay on, and your refrigerators and everything else. With locations in Garden City, Madison Heights, and White Lake, they've been serving Southeast Michigan for over now 55 years. Visit FamilyHeating.com to schedule your free estimate today. FamilyHeating.com. See what Dan Pelko, Crystal Klemperd Pelko, the next generation can do for you with Family Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. FamilyHeating.com. You'll be so glad you did. I am. We continue in focus on WJR. Well, let me see here. I just I just had this story. High-impact winter storm continues across northern Michigan and, you know, the UP. Last I heard, thousands of people were still without power. Did you hear that as well?
Yeah, I think the last I heard, I want to say 80,000. And
yikes.
Yeah, it looks like, I mean, the Upper Peninsula just got completely buried under. Then, of course, the northern half of the Lower Peninsula. But, last year, they just recently got the funding approved to be bailed out from last year's storm.
Yeah, this is not good. This is not trending in a way that any of us are going to embrace or like. We'll stay on top of the story. What's this story you sent me? Are U.S. flights safe? Feds say yes, but signs of danger are growing. What's that about?
Yeah, I think it's just what we talked about with Peter Meyer or earlier in the hour where. Yeah, right now they have enough people to safely staff the airports and the TSA, but as this goes on longer and longer, I mean, what they say, like 300 TSA agents have quit just because this is the second time they've dealt with it in a short period of time.
They have to pay their bills.
Right, so eventually, the longer this shutdown goes, the more TSA agents are going to quit, the less are going to show up for work, and then obviously you can't safely staff an airport that way.
Democrats, stop doing this to your people. I know you care about power. Everybody in politics does, Democrat, Republican, Independent. But the reality is you're not touching ICE, which is what you say you're against. Fund DHS. That will get the TSA people paid. That will get the Coast Guard people paid. Just do the right thing. Do your job.
And from what I understand, the House did pass it, but they're waiting on the Senate.
Well, there is no excuse for this to keep going on like this. None zero. No excuse whatsoever. I keep seeing this headline. I don't read into it, and I should. Trump delivers ultimatum to Iran. What does that mean?
You know, I feel like he's delivered a lot of ultimatums to
Maybe
Iran.
Maybe too many.
And everyone, yeah, it's like, God, what was that, the red line that they crossed last week and we didn't follow through on the threat? Once you do that, then you know, they know not to take you seriously.
Well, let me see if there's any positive reasoning here. We've been told by the president, and I believe this, that because of all of the places he's opened up to drilling and to oil exploration, that we, the United States, has plenty of oil, plenty of gas, plenty of good, clean coal. So when the president said many countries should send warships to help open the Strait of Hormuz, this shipping route, of course, it's become the flashpoint in the Iran war. All of these other countries, China, France, Japan, South Korea, and UK, depend on the oil going through the Strait of Hormuz. Supposedly, if I've been paying attention, we don't. Is that correct or not? Hasn't he said we already have plenty of oil? We don't depend on ships going through the Strait of Hormuz?
I know we use a lot less than the 20% of worldwide oil that goes through the Straits of Hormuz. I know it's much lower, but, you know, I got to say, I feel like the explanation when it comes to oil prices changes every time they go up. From what I understand, the last explanation I heard is that oil is a global price. So even if you have plenty, you know, you're in your part of the world, any disruption affects the entire supply line. That's how I understand it.
All right. And let me just send out a big heart to Temple Israel. Unfortunately, they're good at this, showing resilience after an attack. This is the case with all Jewish people around the world. The resilience they show. But at Temple Israel, to have their Shabbat service the day after the attack and to show their strength and their faith is truly exceptional. And yeah. I didn't want that to go by without mentioning it. I certainly don't want it to go by that, in fact, we have a great show up next called JR Afternoon with Ryan Ermani.
Paul, I'm really looking forward to it.
Well, I love the fact that you're going to look at the NCAA brackets.
Got it.
And that you're going to hold our hand through that. You might want to get Dave Rieger on because he uses DraftKings. They picked and won all the Academy Awards, and I bet they're going to be right on top of the NCAA as well.
Whatever he's picking, I'm picking the opposite.
Do you fill out the brackets? I always wait until after the tournament to fill out the brackets. I've been much more successful.
Right, it's much better that way. I do fill one out. You'd be surprised to know who I have winning it all.
Well, does that mean I have to wait and listen to your show?
You got it.
Deep tease. A hook. Now I'm hooked, and I have so much to do, but nothing more important than staying tuned for JR Afternoon with Ryan Ermotti. Go on and make it a great one. Regards, Paul W. Smith.